This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
The following podcast is for parents, maybe not for kids. Hey, welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, May 27th, the Acne Flashbacks edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm a writer at Slate. I'm the author of the book How to Be a Family. I'm the dad of Lyra, who's 16, and Harper, who's 13, and we live in Arlington, Virginia.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to three littles, Henry, who's 9, Oliver, who's 7, and Teddy, who's fabulous 4. I'm coming to you from our temporary lodging, which is on the Air Force Academy campus, and it's graduation weekend, so there are a number of loud aircraft that will be flying over, hopefully not during this taping, but possibly. So, you know, keep your ears perked for those.
And hi, my name is Dwayne Richards, and I am an anti-racism facilitator, the founder of the Anti-Racism Fight Club. I am an author, keynote speaker, and also I am an advice columnist for Slate for Care and Feeding. So you may have seen some of my writings. So I have two little kids, daughter, 10-year-old Emiko, and my 7-year-old daughter, Reiko. They both have Japanese names. My wife is Japanese. And I am coming at you from Los Angeles, California, where the wind chills and balmy 70 degrees today. It's nice.
Love it. Welcome, Dwayne. We're really happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
We are delighted to have another LA person just lording their weather, the delightful weather over us, but you could have an earthquake at any second.
Any second.
On today's show, we're going to counsel a mom who had terrible acne when she was growing up and now is kind of stressing out over her son and his breakouts. And then we've got a question about a little boy who has gotten obsessed with gender norms. His mom is worried. She's also worried that maybe she's a little too worried. We'll talk to her about that. On Slate Plus today, we're going to talk to Dwayne about what it's like being a care and feeding columnist and a parent, and what happens when the advice you give ends up hitting really close to home. But first, we're going to start out with triumphs and fails. Dwayne, what do you have for us on your joyous, glorious return to the show? A triumph or a fail?
Yeah, so I think I had a fail last time, which was the first time. So I'm going to go with the triumph today. And it doesn't actually have to do with my own kids. This is kind of interesting. So as I mentioned, I'm an anti-racism facilitator, and I also train children between the ages of 5 and 12 on how to be anti-racist. And one white mom was just like, there's no way you're going to get my 5-year-old to sit still on a Zoom for an hour. There's just no way you're going to do it, especially he doesn't know you and all that stuff. I was like, look, like, I got this. Like, oh, there's no way. Trust me, I've done this a million times. And so I did it. This kid was riveted, and he, from what I hear, he keeps asking his mom to come back again for another anti-racism session. And the mom's like, I don't know how you did it. How do you do it? And one of my friends, a white woman named Karen, I mean, believe this or not, like, it's
pleasure.
Perfect. So she's just like, hey, Dwayne, I don't know how you do it. You're like the white person whisperer. You have a way of just relating to these people. It's cool. So I just love the fact that this 5-year-old was able to hear my whispers of anti-racism blowing in his ear. And that sounds kind of dirty, but that's not what I meant. He just was really moved, and it was awesome.
This is a huge triumph, like, and on many levels, right? The sitting still and also the delivering of the message. I think this is great.
Boy, am I glad we have the white person whisperer on the show this week. It's going to be great. Finally, someone who white people will understand. All right, that is a great triumph. I am in awe because I would not be able to command a five-year-old's attention for even 1 second on Zoom. Elizabeth, what do you have for us this week?
Okay, well, last week I shared what a terrible crash landing we had back into kind of post-pandemic life. So this week I'm sharing a triumph in that as we're kind of getting used to life here in Colorado and meeting up with some people, my kids are doing like great at making friends and just being with new people, which I was nervous about. But we went to this concert they had on base outside at the golf course. And there were kids there, but it wasn't really aimed at kids. And Oliver sort of found a patch of trees to go play in. And then Henry ran off and we were like, well, where did he go? And next thing we know, he has like gathered all of the children there, all of them, all the ages, all the everything, and has gathered them into this large game of like stick tag, which is questionable. There was throwing of sticks and running around, but they're having a great time and just really watching Henry be like an includer of everyone. And he came back and he was like, I met these three new kids and they're all moving here too. And this, you know, kid is leaving and these ones are living here. And just like Teddy was even over there playing, and even Oliver like tolerated the group, you know, ness of it all. So I'm glad to see like we haven't forgotten how to make friends. We're still includers and that like we're going to be okay as we reintegrate fully kind of into life here.
Congratulations to you on raising such a natural leader.
Yeah. I mean, we could do better than stick tag.
Air Force kids, they'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. What are you going to do?
They could all be flying F-14s with their dads still, for all you know. That's a great one. I'm so glad that it's going a little better than last week.
Yeah, yeah.
Great triumph. I, you will be happy to know, have a fail. A classic school interaction fail. We got an email from the middle school, like one of the counselors last week, like a big announcement saying, hey, you know, we're very happy to announce that eighth grade graduation is coming up. Harper's graduating from eighth grade. And it's going to be a great event. It's going to be a graduation ceremony on Zoom. And then they gave all the details for the graduation ceremony on Zoom. And I read the email and I sort of snapped a little bit. Now, I didn't press send before I reread my email, and then I re-edited it because the first version I wrote was basically like, what the fuck is this? Then I calmed down and I wrote, I'm sure that you guys did everything you could to try and find a way to do an actual event in person, including exploring all the wonderful outdoor options.
But,
and I'm sure that, you know, you're as sad as I am that it just couldn't work out to do it that way. But I really think that almost every parent who gets this email, the first thing they're going to say is, why isn't it outside? And I wish that you'd put something in the email just sort of acknowledging that, just acknowledging we tried, but we couldn't do it for X reason or Y reason. Wouldn't that have been better? And after this difficult year, blah, 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 blah. I was very proud of myself for my reasoned response. So I press send and I thought, okay, I'm angry, but I kept it together. I sent a message, which I think will be useful to them, but which also I think makes clear how I feel about this situation. Like maybe 10 minutes later, I got an email back, not from the person who sent the original email, but from the vice principal. And even though as a child, I never got an email from the vice principal, obviously, email hadn't been invented yet, but it was amazing the thrill of horror that went through me when I realized the vice principal had emailed me. So I opened the email and it goes, hi, Dan. Arlington School sent out an email 3 days ago saying that all graduation ceremonies will be virtual. Thanks for writing. So, for the 1,000th time in my children's school career, my fail is that I didn't read all the emails.
Oh, man. Oh,
I love this so much.
Wow.
In my defense, I counted, and in the week previous to that email, the various Arlington schools email people sent me 14 different emails.
Yeah.
Not including the two emails we get every single morning with links to the COVID symptom check. We get those emails on days that the kids are going to school in person, but also we get them on days that they're going to school virtually. Also, we get them on Saturday and Sunday.
Also, maybe the school's email could have said, like, as per the district's instruction.
That would have been great. But nevertheless.
But it didn't. But you can still, see, I still think the win, though, you didn't send the first email, because that would have been so much worse.
The fact that I didn't send the first email, really, it means that my child will be allowed to graduate.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Was there an apology? Was there anything? Did you just, like...
I just wrote back, I think I actually wrote LOL.
See, Dan, this is the thing. As they say in the streets, your apology needs to be as loud as your disrespect. And that's the thing. Like, that's what you have to do. You got to make sure that... I think it was fine. I think it was a mistake any of us could make. But, you know, sometimes when you're on the opposite end of that, because I get those all the time when people are just like, shoot first, ask questions later. I'm just like, I'm just waiting for that nice apology. Just waiting for it.
Thankfully, I'm delivering it right here on a podcast listened to by millions.
Yes.
Eventually, it's going to filter its way back to that vice principal. All right, let's talk some business. If you're not a subscriber to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, well, what are you doing? What's going on? Subscribe to the show. It won't cost you anything, but it does mean that the episodes will just appear in your podcast app like magic every Thursday instead of you having to search the internet for them, frantic, late at night, foaming at the mouth, desperate for your fix. We'll deliver it straight to you. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app. Hey, if you like the show and wish you could have a little bit more of it, I got great news for you. You can sign up to be a subscriber to Slate Plus. Then you get a bonus segment every single episode. Plus, you don't even have to listen to ads. You get the purely concentrated Mom and Dad Are Fighting experience. On our bonus segment today, Dwayne's going to be talking about how giving advice has changed how he parents, what it's like being a care and feeding columnist and professional advice giver, and also a parent, and whether his kids believe he's actually qualified for that job. Here's a sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus. What do your kids think about your parenting advice career? Do they think it's bullshit that people ask you questions about parenting?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They think I'm full of shit.
So, like, not only do you get fun extra segments if you're a Slate Plus subscriber, but you'll also get bonus episodes for shows like Slow Burn and Big Mood, Little Mood. Plus, you get to read every single article you want to on the Slate site without ever once getting one of those big interruption pop-up windows that are like, please subscribe. You won't get those. You'll have already subscribed. It'll be great. You'll love it. Most importantly, you'll support the show. We can't do Mom and Dad Are Fighting without the support of Slate Plus members. It's only $1 for the first month. To sign up, just visit slate.com/momanddadplus. Each week I write the Slate Parenting Newsletter. It's not only the best place to learn about all our parenting stuff, like episodes of the podcast, dispatches from Care and Feeding, from Doyen and Jamila and others, and much, much more. Not only is it all that, but it's also just a personal email from me every single week with stories about the family, stories about more and more parenting fails as they accelerate their pace in my life, stories about cicadas. Sign up at slate.com/parenting email. And finally, check us out on Facebook. You can just search for Slate Parenting in your Facebook portal of choice. It's a really good group. They're fun, they're active, they're very supportive, and we moderate it. So when they're not fun and supportive, they get banned. It's a great place to get good advice and just to commiserate. Slate Parenting on Facebook.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out their recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, back to the show. All right, let's get into our very first listener question today. It is being read, as always, by the merveilleux Sasha Leonard.
Hi, Mom and Dad are fighting. My son is 13 and is starting to get a lot of acne. I had terrible acne growing up and dealt with a ton of self-esteem issues relating to it. I have been open with him about my experience with it growing up. He doesn't like his acne, but he also hates taking showers and rarely remembers to wash his face. I don't know how much to intervene. I have given him acne face wash, and we encourage him to shower daily. I don't want to harp on it too much, but I also want him to be able to get it under control if he can. Am I messing with his self-esteem by constantly reminding him to wash his face? Do I just leave the face wash in the shower and hope he uses it? I have been completely taken off guard at how much seeing his acne has brought back my horrible teen years. Part of me wonders if this is more my problem than his. Any advice?
My kids are obviously too young to be facing this problem yet, but I actually think about this because I also felt like skin issues were a huge part of my teen years, and reflecting on that, trying to almost deal with that now so that I don't reflect it on to my children. But I think there's kind of two parts, right? There's this emotional part and you're feeling emotional about it, but there's also the idea that you cannot shower and wash this kid's face. So he is going to have to do it. And I think you a little bit have to come to peace with it being his body and something that you are there to support and love him as he chooses to do something about it. I definitely think buy the things, put them in the shower, have the stuff available, maybe also try to have conversations about it that are either reflecting on how you felt in a way that opens the conversation, but not putting that on him to feel the same way, or you have to do this. I also don't know if there's a difference between men and women or boys and girls with acne. I know that for a while on TikTok, there was a whole trending boys with acne are cute. And that clearly has not happened for women. That may play into it, too. It may have been a bigger deal for you than it is for him. But I'm interested to hear what you guys think. But I basically feel like you cannot make this child do anything that he doesn't want to do. So all you can try to do is continue to be loving and supportive of him and who he is, and there with answers and getting your doctor involved or whatever when he is ready to do this. Oh, I did want to mention one more thing, though. There is a wonderful episode of 6 Minute Sex Ed. It's a little podcast, and she has an Instagram account. And she just did a really lovely episode on body odor that kind of covers some of this. And I thought she had some great tips, but that's kind of aimed more at something you could even get him to listen to kind of talk about it, and also coaching for parents. But what do you guys think?
This is all kind of new to me because I have smooth, chocolatey skin, and I don't really know what acne is. I hear it's something that white people get every now and then. I'm kidding.
You've been perfect forever.
I'm kidding. I don't want the hate mail. I'm totally kidding. I've had acne before. Elizabeth, you crushed it. The only thing I would add is that if the pain becomes too intolerable, the emotional pain, the dude's going to do what he needs to do to get his shit clean. He's going to wash his face. He's going to wash his armpits. He's going to do whatever he needs to do to make sure he smells good, looks good, and takes care of himself. As a man who used to be a teenager, I know that impressing the opposite sex was something that was a big deal for me. And if that means I need to wash my face 2-3 times a day in order to have that smooth, chocolatey skin that I was just alluding to earlier, then that's exactly what I'll have to do.
It is amazing to me how the traumas of our own childhoods, the major and minor traumas, always seem to come back with our own kids. And like this letter writer, I've been surprised a million times at the ways that specific things that my kids face bring it all rushing back. And it can be a real challenge as a parent to not let that reaction drive the way that you are dealing with your kid, and instead to listen to how they feel about it, which may reflect the way you once felt about it, or may be their own quirky, idiosyncratic way of thinking about this problem, may not even be a problem.
And Elizabeth, you made another good point too. I was just going to say, Dan, real quick, is that when you had talked about the TikTok thing with the boys who look cute and how girls don't have that, you know, girls with acne looking cute, she's probably experiencing the pain of not being viewed as cute, where boys, especially in today's culture, now have the luxury of potentially being cute. So maybe it's not as big of a deal for this kid as it was for her growing up. And she's putting that pain that she was going through onto her kid, potentially.
That TikTok trend is very funny. It's like dad bod, but for teens.
Yeah.
All the evidence we have from this letter is her saying he doesn't like it. I don't get a sense of what those conversations really have been like. You know, she says she's been open with him, which I think is good, but I hope that she is also open to listening to him about how he actually feels about this and how much of an issue he truly views it as. And so I do think that even if he views his acne with the same alarm that you once did, the added memories that you are piling on top of everything for yourself means it's definitely more of a problem for you than it is for him, even if it's a problem for him. So start from that point. Mm-hmm. Start knowing I need to shed at least a little bit of this weight of my past to help him deal with what he's facing, as opposed to making him deal with what I was facing 20 years ago. That said, I also am a firm believer that it is your civic duty to tell a teenage boy 100 times a day to take a fucking shower, because otherwise they won't. And then they will become an EPA branded Superfund site that requires federal cleanup over the course of hundreds of years. Their room will have to be filled with concrete and your house will have to be destroyed. So whatever the case with this acne wash, I think you are totally within your rights to keep pushing this kid to take a fucking shower, to wash his face. Maybe it will work and maybe it won't, but I don't think it's going to do anything to his self-esteem. I think that's just plain old parental nagging, which in this case you are entirely justified to do.
Yeah, I think some cleanliness standards in general with teens. But my best friend growing up hated taking showers. I don't know why. Like when we were about this age, like 12 and 13, and I remember her mom having to like incentivize her to make sure she was showering. I mean, that's part of what we do as parents now. So I definitely see that. But you can't make him use the face wash, make him use the stuff. I definitely think like the showering is something you should incentivize. I think also letting them know that treating it is important, like treating the acne is important so that you don't get scarring and other things, and that there are things out there. Because since everyone gets it, I do sort of wonder if you feel like, well, this is something I'll just get through. And sometimes even just the information of like when you're ready to do this, or that there are treatments for this, and when you're ready for that, I'm happy to be the person to advocate with those, either with a doctor or by buying over-the-counter stuff or whatever, you know, depending on the situation. But I just think if you like harp on it, and Dan, like you said, coming from that place of pain, you may end up making it worse. So finding that balance between kind of informing and nagging is, well, that's really hard for me. So, you know, that's a hard place to be.
Nag on the shower, inform on the face wash. That's the answer. A great reminder that kids sometimes just think this is like their cross to bear is just part of being a teenager, and it just sucks for 5 years and then magically it goes away, when in fact there are things you can and perhaps should do above and beyond a face wash, and letting the child know that those options exist and that you're there to help with them when the time comes is a really great idea. All right, letter writer, we wish you the best. Let go of this teenage pain. Do your best not to deliver it all in a big package to your child. And let us know how it goes. We'd love to hear a follow-up as your child starts to figure out just how great showering is. Other listeners, help us help you. Send us an email at momanddad@slate.com, and we'll try and address your problem on the air. All right, now let's move on to our second listener question. This one's being read, for a change, by the superb Sasha Leonard.
Hi, Mom and Dad. I have a multifaceted question. I am mom to a 4.5-year-old boy who has gotten very stuck on gender norms. It's been important to me to raise my kid to know that they can be whoever they like, regardless of gender norms. And I thought I was creating an environment to foster that with the media in his life. Our conversations, encouraging all his interests from Hot Wheels and dinosaurs to manicures and musicals. I knew that around ages 3 to 4, it was very natural for kids to obsess about this. But now we're here, and I'm constantly questioning if I'm handling it right or doing enough. A year ago, when he first asked if he could only play with boys, he quickly dropped it when I told him that he would exclude me and the neighbor girl. And he even reports that his best friend at daycare is a girl. But while he will play with girls, he harps on boy toys and girl toys. For example, he only wants his girlfriends to play with his girl action figures. He had a fit today when it was time to switch dragon toys, and he was going to be stuck with the girl dragon. And I had to cut the playdate short. I push back every time this comes up. There are no boy and girl toys. How would you feel if someone wouldn't let you play with a toy? But he holds fast. He's the only boy in his class at daycare, which seems to be exacerbating things. I'm worried he's going to suppress something he loves because it's a girl thing. Like the rainbow sandals he pointed out were pretty, but refused to let me buy because they're for girls. I'm worried about him becoming a sexist asshole one day if I don't do enough now. I worry that I'm worrying too much about this, and that if I keep pushing back, one day he'll shake it off, which is what my husband thinks. So here are my questions. How do I contribute to push back against these ideas he has about boys and girls and handle these playdate situations? How do I support him as he navigates his feelings of being the only boy in his class? Help.
So this is a really interesting question, and I'm coming from it from a couple of ways. One is that let's just take the gender norms out of the way and just let's change it a little bit to race. When I was like the only black kid in a room full of white people, and I wasn't comfortable doing things that a lot of the white kids did, but my parents were like, look, They weren't worried about me. Like, you're going to figure this out. And a lot of times with 4.5-year-old kids, like we're going back to the gender norms, like we're so stressed out. We're filled with so much information. Like, oh my gosh, we got to make sure we get this right. We don't want our kids to be sexist assholes. I mean, a lot of this stuff they're going to have to figure out on their own. But I think that for me growing up, when I was that way, I wanted to play with all the boy toys, the quote unquote boy toys. And I think, I mean, now I am a proud feminist. I am proudly raising 2 daughters. I was even invited to the White House when the White House was cool, by the way. I mean, it's cool now. It wasn't cool for a short period.
We get it. We get it. Yeah,
right. So to talk about as a person who really is a feminist, and I really believe that people are going to figure this out. Kids will figure this out. We expect so much out of our 4.5, 5-year-old kids. And it's not, we can't expect them to be perfect and have everything figured out. But that being said, you can still lay down breadcrumbs to ensure that they don't go too far down the rabbit hole of toxic masculinity. I think this is more around the realm of normalcy than anything to truly be alarmed by.
I think 4-year-olds are complete assholes. Like, my 4-year-old is the worst. I love him so much. this sounds like standard four-year-old behavior. And when I read this letter, I'm like, stop harping on it, because the more you harp on it, the more power you are giving him to cause a problem with this. Like, you are just telling him, this is something that bothers me. I love, Dween, that you use the word breadcrumbs, because I think that is exactly what you need to be doing. You need to be saying these rules in a way that makes them sound like they are absolutely true, and that it doesn't bother you that they're breaking them or challenging them, so that that becomes his inner monologue, right? Like, four-year-olds are all about separating things into boy things, girl things, you know, like that is what they're doing. I think there was even like, there's this study like where they basically labeled things. They took like magnets and they told a bunch of people, these are boy toys, like a bunch of kids. And then all the boys wanted to play with it. And then they took a separate set of magnets and they labeled them girl things. And then boys didn't want to play with them because they were girl toys. So I think this is just like standard what kids at this age do. They're breaking things into groups. I wouldn't worry about it. Now, if you want to have some house rules, and I would take the gender norms out of it. Like, if there's a boy dragon and a girl dragon, you just say there are two dragons and everybody plays with them. You know, everyone gets 5 minutes with each and then we switch. I wouldn't call them boy dragons. I would just say, you've played with that toy. Your friend wants to play with that toy. We're now going to switch, if that's a house rule. If these kind of toys become problems, remove them. Just remove the toys and put the dragons into a rotation, right? I think also ending the play date, that's a way to have kind of a natural consequence to this as well. I just wouldn't tie it so much to the gender stuff, because I do think that four-year-olds really just kind of react to this. There is a wonderful book called Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, How to Raise Your Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes by Christina Spears Brown. And she talks about this, and kind of this age being difficult in that they're going to display these preferences for boy things or preferences for girl things, and that that's okay. And it doesn't mean you've done a bad job. It doesn't mean that you're raising kids to like fall into specific gendered identities. I think the big thing is just to make sure that your language and your positive approach, like if your kid is a boy and wants to choose things that are for boys in the same way, I think, you know, if Jamila was here, she would say it's okay for a girl to wear like frilly dresses and be into that if that's what they're into. The idea is for you as the parent not to be assigning that to your child, to let your child choose those things. I also think it's okay that he's the only boy in this class, that it is okay to be somewhere different. And that's a great life experience to learn, and in the future may give him some empathy in other situations where he, as a male, is, you know, one of many and someone else is, you know, the one person to say, like, I've had this experience, or be able to draw on some of those feelings. So hang in there. I don't know, Dan, what do you think?
You guys have really nailed basically the specific challenge of parenting kids right around this age, which is you have to be able to lay down the law in as boring a way as possible, to just state things as if they are obvious truths, even when they sound crazy coming out of your mouth. Like, well, of course, you know, in this house, we don't drive trucks into the garbage disposal. But then you have to be consistent and not let them know just how insane it makes you that they keep putting their trucks in the garbage disposal, for fuck's sake. And so it's exactly the same with this, as you guys say. The more you make this about your frustration that your kid is obsessed with gender, the more he is going to push back against that. When, as Dween pointed out, it is the person he is at four and the ideas he has about gender at four are not reflections on you or his future or anything else. They simply are developmentally appropriate milestones. And the person he's going to be as an adult is going to be a reflection of all the things he goes through between now and then, and all the things you teach him and show him between now and then. And this is just going to be like a mote in the mirror at that, you know, by the time he's an actual adult. So yeah, like, try not to stress out about it. Remain consistent, dial back your total stress and worry about it as much as you can. Mostly so that you don't drive yourself crazy, but also so that it doesn't convey in all your messaging to him about this. And I really think you'll be okay. It sounds like this is a thing you really take seriously. My hunch is this is also something your husband takes seriously, based on the fact that he's not like dismissing what you have to say out of hand, but he, as you say, is encouraging you to just keep messaging properly and that your kid will come around. So if both of you are unified on this front and you create a household in which, buddy, there just are no such things as boy and girl toys, you know, oh well, I think eventually this kid is going to be totally fine. Do you guys have any thoughts on, I agree with you, Elizabeth, that he'll be fine as the only boy in the class. Do you have any thoughts on messages that you might give the teacher or the son about what it is that it means to be the only blank in this group? Whether that affects how he should behave in that class or how he should think about the experience, or whether there's something you could be asking the teacher to do that might help him come to terms with this in some way?
I have a thought, because being the only black kid in a class of white kids, my teacher was just so amazing at just checking in with me, white woman, just making sure that I was okay, never really even had to bring up the race aspect. She just knew that I may not be comfortable. So just checking in, getting that person's feelings, just making sure that he or she is feeling comfortable with what's happening during the day is super helpful. Also, just if you feel the fact that he has a best friend that's a girl, I think is a good thing. But somewhere, I don't know where it's coming from, he feels like it's not okay to like quote unquote girl toys. And I guess I'm wondering where that's coming from. It's not coming from home. Probably not coming from school. So where is that coming from? Is it coming from the media, some other place? That's one part of the story that I'm unclear on.
I totally agree with you. I was also wondering where that was coming from. And I do wonder, I mean, listen, girls can play a role, even if it's a class of all girls. It is very possible he could be getting this from a classmate, right? I've certainly seen girls tell my boys, that's for girls, like, or that's a girl toy, or you know, so there may be some of that. So checking in with the teacher about where he's getting that. I mean, the media certainly does a nice job in, you know, telling boys what they should like and girls what they should like. But yeah, I mean, I guess I also feel like this is likely a temporary situation. Like, what are the odds that he's in another class of all girls next year, right? Like,
right.
That seems really... I don't know very many schools that try to put together groups that are like all of one thing and then one of the other in this day and age, right? Like, I think most schools and daycares and things are striving for trying to put together groups that are more diverse. So if you're concerned...
Right. So this is probably a problem for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean...
More at the most.
I don't know. I mean, as a boy mom, it's like so nice when they have girlfriends too. I think it just brings different types of play and different energy and different things. So, sign me up for an all girl class. Throw one of my boys in there. Mostly just
Elizabeth,
Teddy.
Elizabeth, letter writer Elizabeth is offering to trade.
Yes, yeah. Your kid gets to come to my homeschool though, so I don't know. No, if that's very good. Oh, goodness.
All right. I think we are unified on this one. Letter writer, we think you're going to be okay. Try and like dial yourself down and your worries down like 6 notches. Thanks for writing. Send us an update and let us know how it's going. Everyone else, send us a question. We feed on your questions as vampires feed on human blood. It's what we need to stay young and beautiful. So send them in, momanddad@slate.com, post it to the Slate Parenting Facebook group. We would love to hear from you and answer your question on the air. All right. Let's move on to the part of the show where we recommend items or concepts that we think you, our listeners, would enjoy. It's a little section of the show I like to call recommendations. Elizabeth, what do you have for us?
I am recommending an app called Luna, L-O-O-N-A, Bedtime Calm and Relax app. And this is an app for people who want to meditate but can't sit still or are too busy or don't want to sit like in silence or in with nothing to do. That would be me. As you go through the meditation, there are like things to do on the screen. So it starts out with a picture that's not colored and you're hearing a nice meditation. in kind of a story form, and it says, like, find the mushrooms, and as you touch the mushrooms, it colors them in. Find this thing, and as you touch it, it colors it in. It's wonderful. I was using it, then I started using it with Henry, and then the other kids kind of got into it, and it's just been a really nice way to calm down, particularly since we've been traveling. We don't always have all of our tools with us, but in those moments of, like, very high stress where you just need to bring everyone down, it's great. It's on my phone. I can just say, like, who wants to do one of these stories? And we turn on the story. Calming music. I just really like it. It does legitimately make me sleepy at night. I know you're not supposed to be looking at your phone, but sometimes when we're traveling, I don't sleep very well in new spaces. And so this has just been so wonderful. So it's called Luna, L-O-O-N-A.
I'm fascinated by this meditation app for people who don't like silence or stillness. The whole point of meditation.
But this, like, makes you focus on this thing, but it's producing it physically. I don't, like, when I sit down to meditate, it's like, I have a million other things going on, which I know is the point, but I feel like, oh, I just need to get this perfect. I just need to do this. This gets rid of all that because there's something for me to do and to calm me down.
Daween, what about you? What do you recommend?
Yeah, so I hate to do this, but I have to recommend something that I feel like is going to help you, and it's something that I'm behind, which is my anti-racism fight club for kids. And it's not really, it's one of those things that I have to bring up because I know it can help people, and I know that a lot of white parents have come to me and like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to talk to my kid about racism. I don't know how to do it. Like, I don't even know the first thing to tell him or her around what to do, what to say, how to be anti-racist, how to deal with racism in person, how to deal with racist family members. So I looked around and I was like, you know, there's not a lot out there. So I was like, hey, I'm going to create something. So it's called the Anti-Racism Fight Club, and it's for kids between the ages of 5 and 12.
All right. How can people find it?
Oh, just go to my website, DoweenRichards.com, D-O-Y-I-N, Richards.com. My name is not phonetically correct, and that is really difficult. It's just like, and I could thank my dad for that, God rest his soul. But yeah, that's, my name means royalty or son of the king, but it's still like, it's a huge burden just to have to tell people how to pronounce my name all the time. But hey, I've been doing it for a few decades, so I'm cool with it.
You got a whole patter down at this point.
Right.
All right, I'm recommending a book. It is just out now. It's called The Fifth Quarter by a guy named Mike Dawson. It's a comic, a middle grades comic about a girl who gets really super into basketball, even though she's not very good at basketball at all. So it's very relevant to my childhood experience as the kid who always loved sports, but was very not good at them at all, and was always picked last, but was still in there every single game. It's very sweet. It's very funny. I would say it's perfect for fourth or fifth graders. I particularly love it because the author, Mike Dawson, got his book deal for the series that this is the first book in, based on a comic that he drew for Slate about his own daughter's experience playing basketball. I edited that comic for Slate several years ago. He got a book deal out of it. The first book is out now, and it's totally charming. I like it a lot. Once again, it's called The Fifth Quarter. Check it out.
That's awesome.
All right, that's it for our show. One last time, if you got a question for us, email us, momanddad@slate.com, or go seek out the Slate Parenting Facebook group, join it, and post it there. We'll happily gank it from the group and bring it right here to the show. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Elizabeth Newcamp and Daween Richards, I'm Dan Coyce. Thanks for listening.